This is Amarins. Hi again, my name's Arthur. I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to episode 67 of the Amarins podcast for Tuesday, January 29th, 2008. I'd like to give a special welcome to new listeners. I've picked up a few over the past week or so. So welcome, have a look around, hope you like what you see. Hope you'll be back often, tell all your friends. Today, I'm going to tell you about our weekend, because Auckland had a holiday weekend. Thousands were amused. Christian youth in New Zealand parachuted to music, and New Zealand's election campaign is underway. Yippee-zippee. But there's actually some unusual aspects to that I'll talk about later. But first, this past weekend, it was a three-day holiday weekend because it was Auckland anniversary weekend. And first, I think I'll probably tell you what it was. There are 12 of these anniversary days around the country, and it corresponds to 19th century provinces. And what that means is that the area that's covered by a particular anniversary celebration is probably bigger than the region itself. For example, Auckland's extends far east and a bit south and also a bit north. It's not just Auckland, the Auckland region specifically. And that's true for other areas as well. There's some that are fairly close to their modern boundaries, but most of them do extend far beyond their current modern boundaries. But provinces, actually, were abolished by Parliament in 1876, which made Parliament the supreme government in the country. And, of course, New Zealand was much smaller then, but even now, it just doesn't make sense to have provinces, because this is a country of only 4 million people. And geographically, in terms of square kilometers, it's roughly the same size as Italy or the U.S. state of Colorado. So it's too small, I think, to have provinces. It's just another layer of government that's not really necessary. But, of course, Parliament didn't stop there, and they, in 1950, they abolished the upper house of Parliament, which was called the Legislative Council. So that left only the lower house, which is called the House of Representatives. And today, that's the only house of Parliament. And when people say Parliament or the House, they mean the same thing, obviously, since there's only one. Now, anniversary days may have some vague connection to the founding of the 19th century province of that name, like Auckland, for instance. But let's be honest, for most people, it's just simply a three-day weekend. Now, Auckland's is marked by what they call the Auckland Anniversary Regatta, which this year was the 168th annual Auckland Anniversary Regatta, which is essentially just a whole bunch of boats out in Auckland Harbor. Is what it amounts to. There's some races, and there's some ships on exhibit, and there's like a fun fair down in the Viaduct Harbor down in Auckland City on the waterfront. The regatta itself is New Zealand's oldest sporting event, and some people are really into that. I mean, Auckland, one of Auckland's many names is the City of Sails. I'm not into sailing myself, so it doesn't have any particular attraction to me. But some people are really into that, and for the rest, like me, it's just a three-day weekend. Now, this particular three-day weekend, Nigel's mom came up to stay with us. She came up on Saturday, and Saturday night we had Nigel's sister and niece around for dinner, and just a barbecue, nothing fancy. And then on Sunday, another of Nigel's sisters came up with her two daughters, and we went over to the other sister's house, and we all got together again for dinner. And then yesterday, we didn't do much of anything. It was just sort of a quiet day. We went out for lunch, and that was really about it. And Nigel's mom went home this morning. And the rest of the day, I've been just dealing with little bits and pieces. And speaking of which, I think in the past I've mentioned the fact that we have gas hot water. Well, you will be pleased to know, if you've listened to the older episodes, that we have sorted our hot water problem in the kitchen once and for all. We had a wee little gas heater that a previous owner had put in there, rather than using the main heater, because you turn on the tap and you have to wait quite a while for the water to come. Well, they put in a heater that was way too small, and it often didn't work at all, and when it did, the flow rate was really low, and it was just terrible. So we had the original heater reconnected to the kitchen taps, and now we have mains pressure hot water once again. And yeah, we have to wait a couple minutes for it to get there, but big deal, I'd rather have good hot water. But I think the main reason I thought of that just now was that I had to have the plumber come back today to fix something else. It had nothing to do with any of that, but there you go. Now, I talked about the Christian youth parachuting to music, and it's sort of a play on words, kind of like last week's thing about the dead prime minister. But New Zealand has this music festival every year called Parachute, which is a Christian music festival. And that's Christian in sort of a loose sense because not all of the performers are necessarily Christian groups, like contemporary, what do they call it? Contemporary Christian rock or whatever it's called. I don't know. Anyway, not all of them are that, but it is a Christian-based thing. So there's lots of tents and tables with Christian groups trying to recruit young people to their church or cause or whatever. And there's a lot of rules that go with it. There's no drugs or alcohol, which is fine with a lot of parents. Girls are required to sleep on one side of the campground in their tents, and boys on another side of the campground in their tents. They're not allowed to mix apart from in the so-called supervised areas. And of course, a lot of parents really like all of this because they think that it's, I don't know, safer, that it's more, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? More, I don't know, more wholesome, I guess. But it does still have these fairly fundamentalist Christian overtones to it. And they're not exactly gay friendly either, as you might imagine. But the thing about it that surprised me this year was there was a report on the number one news program, which is owned by the state-owned TVNZ, which is Television New Zealand, and it's called One News. And of course, it may be owned by the state, but it's run completely as a business, so the government has no say in how anything's presented. The journalism department is independent. It's just not very good necessarily. And this was one of those cases where they were reporting it. It was almost like sucking up to the people who put on this festival about how wholesome it was and how safe it was for parents to let their kids go to it and blah, 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 blah. But not one word about the strict Christian rules, like the fact that boys and girls are physically separated and all those kinds of things. It was a bit creepy, I thought the coverage was. But I suppose that could have just been me. Now, today, the 2008 election campaign got underway for New Zealand. You think you've heard enough about the American contest? Well, no sorry, Bob. The campaign started when the leader of the opposition party, which is the National Party, his name is John Key, delivered a speech on, well, essentially it's about youth issues. And I haven't read the whole speech. I've only read about half of it so far. Rather, I like to read the speeches direct rather than get it filtered through the media. And I have to say that on the whole, the speech wasn't too bad. There were some things in there that were a bit silly. There were some things in there that would get people riled up and they think, yeah, mostly dealing to young people. But I do have some reservations about a lot of it being punitive rather than, it was the stick rather than the carrot kind of approach. And I might have more to say about that later on after I read the entire speech. But at the moment, I was like, oh, this isn't that bad, but that kind of reaction. Well, tomorrow the Prime Minister is delivering a speech as well. And this is unusual because normally the Prime Minister delivers the speech in Parliament in the first session of Parliament of the year, outlining the government's legislative plans and goals for the coming year. However, the Prime Minister is required to give a speech to all members of Parliament in advance. So that meant that the leader of the opposition knew what the Prime Minister would say and then could go out and deliver a speech, basically undercutting everything that the Prime Minister says. And this is true regardless of which party is the party of government or opposition. So the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, Helen Clark, got a bit sick of that and decided that she was going to make a speech before her official speech to Parliament. And basically to put the Labour Party and the National Party sort of on an equal footing going into this election year. So that's what this is all about, why we're having these speeches all of a sudden, why they're such a big deal. The real campaign, of course, doesn't start until later this year, probably October, November, somewhere in there maybe, when the actual election campaign gets underway. Because the actual election campaign, I think it's like 5 or 6 weeks or something, and all of the real campaigning is restricted to that date. But it sort of gets into something that I wanted to mention in passing, because I'm a little bit unsure what to do. There was a new law that was passed called the Electoral Finance Reform Act. And among other things, it outlaws, not outlaws, but severely restricts spending by third parties. Not political parties, but third entities, whatever you want to call them. And here's the background to this. In the last election, there's this fundamentalist, weird Christian group. It was sometimes called a cult. More often than not, it was just called weird. Called Exclusive Brethren. And they spent more than $1 million to try to get the National Party elected. And they did it by funding smear materials directed against the Labour Party and the Green Party in particular, because they felt if they could get the Green Party below the threshold of government that then the National Party would be able to squeak in. And it almost worked. The trouble was that somebody recognized one of the names of one of the people on the pamphlet, realized that they were in exclusive brethren, and blew the whistle. And then the media got it, and the guy who was the head of the opposition National Party at the time, his name was Don Brash, at first tried to deny any knowledge of, oh, no, I don't know anything about that. Well, yeah, he did know something about that. I've never met them. Well, yeah, he did meet them. So all of these lies and backdowns got a bit much, and it ended up costing the National Party the election as much as anything else did. So the Labour Party, which was grossly outspent by the National Party and by these third funding groups like Exclusive Brethren, tried to change that because there's another little anomaly in New Zealand campaign finance law, and that's that rich people in particular can give money to a trust, which is set up specifically to fund elections, and then all that money is pooled together and then given to the candidate. Now, the candidate has to declare the money coming from a trust, but doesn't have to declare who gave money to the trust. So what happens is that very wealthy people who want to influence an election will give money anonymously through a trust, and then the general public doesn't know that they're giving money to, on behalf of these candidates. Now, they all have agendas, of course. Anybody who's got that kind of money to throw around wants something in return. And they all did, at least that we know of anyway. The ones that we know about certainly had agendas of one sort or another. And so this Electoral Finance Reform Act also outlawed those sorts of contributions. Now, the National Party is mostly upset about that more than they are about anything else, because it's going to cut off a huge source of funding for them in this coming election campaign. The amount of vitriol directed against the government for this bill was absolutely astounding. They were saying it was fascism and all the sorts of stuff. Well, the people who were promoting this line, this argument, were associated with a far-right party who's probably not going to be in the new parliament on current polling, or may not be. And so they have a particular agenda to promote and a particular desire to keep anonymous funding and other things like that. So it's a bit, the whole thing was a bit dodgy, and it was one of those instances where the media should have but didn't promote the connections between the various parties involved, and certainly the ones who were promoting this thing. But there is one provision that does trouble me, and that's relating to individuals spending money on perhaps on the part of candidates or campaigns, or to frame issues. And that relates to me as a blogger, because theoretically, a blogger could be in violation of the law if they publish opinion and make money. Now, here's where it gets dicey. No individual who, like me, who has a personal blog could be prosecuted for stating an opinion about the party or the campaign or issues or anything like that. That's obvious. However, if they make money from it, then theoretically they could be prosecuted. The problem is, how much money do you have to make before it's considered commercial? Do you have to make any at all? Do you just have to have the opportunity? Because, for example, on my blog, I have a widget for Amazon. Now, I've never made 1 cent from Amazon or anybody else, but it's there. So theoretically, I could make money from my blog anyway. And if I did, would I then be in violation of law for stating opinions when I get money for it? See, it gets a bit dicey. Now, my main feeling is that my inclination would be to say I'm an individual. Even though I am a member of the New Zealand Labour Party, I'm not an officer, I'm not an official, I'm not affiliated with them beyond just paying my dues. And I sort of think they're on their own, as far as that goes. So I should be able to state my opinion any way I want. And my inclination is to go ahead and make my opinions as I normally would and let the chips fall where they may. There is a part of me that thinks, well, I should consult an attorney to find out what my legal standing is, but I think I'd rather just let the chips fall where they may, because I can't believe that any government would prosecute an individual for stating their own opinions. And I should say that it isn't actually the government, in the Labour-led government, or if National wins the election, it wouldn't be the National government. It would be an independent body called the Electoral Commission, which is charged with enforcing the law as passed. And it's open to interpretation, and ultimately it has to go to court to have those sorts of things all decided. But I think the intent of Parliament was pretty clear, that they didn't mean to punish ordinary people or prevent ordinary people's speech, But it is something that may be coming up again as this campaign goes on. And I'll certainly keep you posted if I hear any more about it. But for the time being, if I don't let George Bush shut me down, I'm not about to let some politicians in Wellington do it either. So that's that for that whole thing. The Australian foreign minister is in the U.S. right now and just had a meeting with Condoleezza Rice, as a matter of fact. And he's declared that the fact that Australia will be leaving Iraq won't harm U.S.-Australian relations. And that's probably true. The U.S. needs Australia far more than Australia needs the U.S., probably. But in any case, Australia was a loyal ally of George Bush, or actually John Howard was a loyal ally of George Bush, and the U.S. owes it to Australia to at least keep the relationship going, even if it's not quite as intense or sycophantic as it used to be. But that was kind of interesting, I thought. But also in their news, Last October, under the previous conservative government, they'd instituted citizenship tests where people have to take answer questions about Australia and its makeup and its history and its sporting events and popular culture, those kinds of things. And there was some talk that it was unfair to immigrants and that they would have to that it should be axed. Well, the current government has had a look at it and they might tweak it a little bit, but they're not likely to change anything. Interestingly, people from India tended to do better on the test than people from New Zealand or Britain, even though we're probably more culturally similar to Australia than India is, which probably means that the Indians take it more seriously than other people do. Now, these sorts of tests are very popular with the with most people. The U.S. requires a citizenship test as well. The U.S. one is a bit different, though, because it focuses primarily on the structure of government and things like that. I have a slightly different opinion about that as an immigrant myself, and I find them to be very insulting and condescending. And I wouldn't feel that quite so strongly about that if it weren't for the fact that most people who were born in a country couldn't pass their own country's citizenship tests because they don't understand the form of government. They may know about pop culture, but that's about as far as it goes. And I just think it's a bit too nativistic, a bit too chauvinistic to force foreigners to take a test on pop culture and governmental structure that ordinary citizens couldn't pass themselves. I personally am all for a mandatory instruction in the form of government and things like that that all people should have to take, including citizens born in the country. In my home state, you used to have to take what we call the Constitution test once in high school and again at university. There are ways around that. If you took a university, for instance, if you took a course in American government and passed it, then that was considered the same as passing the test a second time. And I believe the teachers had to take it to be certified as well. I don't know if that's still the case. So it was potentially a third time, I think. At any rate, it was a very big deal to have to get through that in school, in high school, when I was there. And some people didn't. Some people didn't get through it. But I thought it was really easy. And if you'd paid attention throughout your schooling, you would pass it. But, I mean, I think it's reasonable to expect that citizens ought to have a fundamental understanding of the way they're governed. And that would apply to immigrants as well. I just find it a bit odd to require immigrants to learn what people born in a country themselves haven't bothered to learn. That's all. But that's my two cents. You're free to disagree with me as much as you want. I'm going to go to the comments now. And first up, I'm actually going to play an audio comment I received today.
Hey, Archer. This is Archer from Archer Radio. I'm just calling to leave you a voicemail message because I'm calling all my favorite podcasters and telling them how much I enjoy their show. And that's really all I have to say. And I'm recording this for my show. Of course, the listeners are going to hear this 15 times. Anyway, I hope all is well. I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Archer. Trust Archer to come up with unusual things to do for his show. But I had to laugh when he said he was recording it for his show because whenever you record with Archer, he's always recording for his show, regardless whose show it's for. But thank you very much for that. But I am going to go on to the written comments on my blog, aarons.com. And the first comment is from, Archer, who said, "The sound is great, so crisp and clear. When you said in the opening, a dead New Zealand prime minister is causing a stink in Northern Ireland, I burst out laughing. That was the funniest thing I've heard in a long time. Of course, once I heard the story, it made sense." People in New Zealand are still buying CDs? That's odd. What a useless report. So glad to hear I Say is back. I wondered what happened to those guys. I've been waiting for an update. I'll have to go to their page and listen. I know less about RSS than others, so I doubt I could help. And I said, thanks for the feedback on the sound. I still hope to keep improving it. We'll see. There are people who are still buying CDs, although they may be older and more rural. I don't have any proof of that. It just makes sense to me. So take it with a grain of salt. Nevertheless, the report was useless. No repair to I Say yet, but here's hoping. Now, part of what that's talking about, well, the sound is obvious. You know, I've got this new system. And one thing I did last week is I put a couple pillows closer to the mic to absorb some of the sound that was bouncing around, which is one of the things that really annoyed me. On the whole, I was much happier with the sound from the last episode than the first one when I used the new mic. So I take that as a good sign. But the bit about the CDs, we're talking about the report I mentioned in the previous episode where they were saying that New Zealanders preferred classic rock, and I was saying it was ridiculous because it was only talking about people who bought CDs. Now, when I said that it tends to be people who are older and more rural, the older I talked about last week, because younger people may download from Vodafone or from iTunes or something like that, or illegally, whereas older people might still go to the store and buy a CD. And I also said they may be more rural, and that's actually kind of an unusual thing, because what I'm talking about there is broadband. It's less available in rural areas than it is in more urban areas. And so it's entirely possible that people who live in smaller towns or more distant towns or literally in the country may have to go to the store and buy CDs because they may not have any alternatives. But overall, I think the future is digital. I mean, obviously it is, but I think it's going to pick up speed here in New Zealand as well over time. I don't know. I have no idea what the demographics are or what, which is why I said take it with a grain of salt. And I have no idea what the totals are for various sources, but I would be surprised if the legal downloads weren't increasing as a portion of the market. But I bet that a majority of the albums are still bought on actual CDs. But again, I have no proof of any of that. That's just what makes sense to me. But I'll tell you one thing that does annoy me is when the music industry keeps talking about how illegal downloads are killing off their industry. And I always think to myself, same thing about movies. I always think to myself, well, it could be that. And another factor could be that you're putting out crap that nobody wants to buy. Maybe if you put out better product, people would actually buy it and you might be doing better. Have you thought of that? But of course, their first move is to always try to come up with some way of clamping down on downloads of even legal ones. You know, having digital rights management and all this other stuff that means that they just get to control things more, in my opinion. But what I didn't say in the comment, too, was about the dead New Zealand Prime Minister. That just sort of popped into my head, and I thought it was too funny to make it more serious, so I left it in. But, my mind just works that way sometimes, I'm afraid. But there you go. And I did go over to the website for I Say, and watch the video. And it's actually a video of Andrew and Jason on holiday. I think it was early in the new year, I believe. Anyway, somewhere around there. Anyway, I've forgotten already. And it's really quite nice. And go have a look if you choose. And if you do know anything about RSS feeds, and particularly how to fix them, I know that Andrew would love the help. And the site is located at isayisayisay.info. But check them out anyway. And if you do know anything about RSS feeds, email Andrew, because I know he would like the help. And the next comment was from Eric, from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land, who said, "Isn't iTunes a lovely thing? I know that getting onto the main page has allowed me a couple new listeners a day." And I said, "Yes, it is lovely. I'm still clinging to the front page, but we've both been knocked down a place. It happens. I'll just enjoy the ride while it lasts." And of course, part of the thing that got me promoting reviews in iTunes was Eric and his promotion, and I use the term loosely, 5-star reviews. But it got me onto the front page, and it's been good. I have gotten additional listeners from that, new listeners. And when I say that I'm clinging to the bottom, I checked this morning, and mine was the last one on the front page because there are these odd ones like truth-driven thinking and things like that that keep causing problems to real I shouldn't say that. That's really judgmental. Cause problems to the rest of us who want to be there. Let's leave it at that, shall we? But anyway, I've since gotten a 14th review on iTunes Music Store, the U.S. Music Store, and it's from Mad Beach, I think it was. I've lost my note, so that's just from memory. If I've mangled that, I do forgive me. But thank you very much. And if you haven't left a 5-star review on iTunes, whatever country you're in, please do so, because it does help me. And if you don't want to or don't feel like it, just go to the store and go to all the reviews that there are. You have to click on View All or something like that. And when it says, was this review helpful, just click on yes, because that helps as well. I've noticed that some of you have been doing that. Thank you very much. More even since the last time I checked, which was one day last week. I don't remember which day. Because contrary to the way it may seem, I do not check it every day. Maybe every other day, but not every day. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that obsessive, at least not yet. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I needed to tell you about for today. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head. The only other things I did want to mention in passing were that David Byrne from That Blue Jeans Guy had a birthday on January 23rd, and I forgot to mention it last time. So happy belated birthday to David. And happy birthday to the boyfriend, Archer's boyfriend, whose birthday was this weekend. Happy birthday. And that's all I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but if that's the case, I'll just have to remember it on Friday. And that is it for this episode of the Amrens Podcast. Do leave me a comment on my blog, amrens.com, or send an email to me at amrens@yahoo.com, or leave a message on my U.S. listener line, as Archer did, on 206-339-8413. And, of course, don't forget to leave a 5-star review on iTunes whenever you get the chance. Thank you so much. That's it for today, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday. Bye.